you know, the more that we can build on those connections, the more that we can deepen that level of storytelling, but also just getting that storytelling in front of them, in front of the audiences, in the ways that they want to consume it, I think there's a lot of opportunity.
Welcome to Drinks Insider, the podcast that's interested in everything you can drink. If it's legal, if you can sell it, and more importantly, if you can make money from it, then we're going to talk about it. So come on this journey into the commercial world of everything drinkable. I'm your host, Felicity Carter, and you're listening to Drinks Insider. How do you turn your customers into fans? How do you even begin to connect with your customers? And how do you do it if you have a wildly diverse customer group? The man to ask is Justin Noland, who recently became VP of Digital Experience at Treasury Americas. Treasury Wine Estates is a multinational company headquartered in Australia, which has about 20 wine brands in its portfolio, including the blockbuster 19 Crimes, as well as some very upmarket brands. Justin is an acknowledged expert in all things digital, and in this wide-ranging conversation, he talks about everything from wine as entertainment to whether demographics are a useful way to segment the market. Now, we're going to talk about wine, obviously, but this is a conversation that is relevant across the beverage space, whether you're in spirits, tea, non-alc or water. And don't forget, if you want the takeaways, sign up for the Drinks Insider newsletter at www.drinksinsider.com. Justin, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it, Felicity.
Right. Let's get stuck into it. So you've moved into the role of digital experience. Can you define what that is?
Yeah. So digital experience is essentially every touch point that our consumers have with our brands in an online way. So if you're on the internet and you connect with our brands, that is what the digital experience is all about. It could be everything from an email you receive to a website you visit to an experience that we deliver based off of a QR code on the bottle. But it goes beyond that, and it's all of the tool sets, all of the technology, all of those pieces that allow the teams at Treasury to actually build those experiences to engage with our consumers. So we think about it in a twofold way. It's the enablement of the technology that does all of these cool experiences, but it's also the delivery of those experiences and the best practices and the sort of successful way that we connect our brands with our consumers.
I'm really disappointed that you said that. The word experience to me does not mean email. It means something really sort of Disneyland and exciting. So what is the most exciting and cutting edge experience that you offer?
Well, you say that email is not exciting, right? But email is one of the number one ways we still reach consumers today. Every single day, you're going into an inbox and you're checking on an email and you're seeing what's there. The value is the content that you can provide and the ways that you can connect. Now, we have far more exciting experiences, right? Like last October, 19 Crimes and the brand team there launched a limited offering with Dracula and Frankenstein on the bottles. And those bottles came to life with augmented reality so that you had a kind of a fun experience with your cell phone and having the bottle and Dracula actually coming to life and turning into a bat and having all sorts of fun with it. So there's definitely those kind of experiences that are sort of that awe and kind of have a lot of fun, but it's also that day-to-day connection that we have with our consumers that are club members that are visiting our properties or are just looking for newer products and trying to understand more about where their wine is from and how it was made and all of the added details. Digital is really about connecting all of those dots together in a really seamless and beautiful experience with those customers.
So how many brands in total do you have?
Oh, you know, that changes too often for me to really keep track of. Now, so I work with Treasury Americas, so our real focus is on the U.S. region and as you know, by itself, but then sort of the broader Americas region. You think of all of our luxury brands throughout the Napa Valley, like BV and Behringer and Stag's Leap. But then you also think about some of those brands that you see in grocery stores all over the country, like 19 Crimes and Matua. You know, obviously Treasury is well known for Penfolds from a global perspective. It doesn't necessarily have the awareness in the United States, but that is something that team is.
What?
I know.
What are you doing to change that, Justin?
I think there's a lot of work going into that, and it's a brilliant team that's doing some really great experiential things that are more bringing it to life in person and having people connect to it. So having, you know, people actually come out to an event to experience what Penfolds is all about. They're making great, great progress, and I'm excited to continue to see what happens there. But this is really where digital can be a supportive element, and one of the reasons Treasury is evolving, and as certainly part of my new role, but in a more globalized way to enable digital across all of our brands and in more consistent fashion, but also just to ensure that the teams that are doing that kind of work have the tool sets available to them, have the expertise available to them, and can move quickly with talent.
And how big's the team?
So the digital team overall, so think about it this way, right? Globally, there is a broad global digital team because we know that there are certain synergies. We know that there's certain commonalities across the digital ecosystem that we can build. And as a global organization, we want to be thoughtful of sharing that expertise and sharing what's working and what's not working across the world with all of the various teams. So I work with a brilliant person named Amanda Green. She was the general manager of digital for Penfolds and is now leading digital from a global perspective. When it comes to Treasury Americas, we also understand that regionally, how consumers and how our people interact with a digital environment can be very different, right? So we want to have that localized input and localized direction. So I'll be leading digital experience at Treasury Americas. And that team is relatively small right now. We have about 5 people, but we have an idea of kind of where we want to go and what we're looking to do. And again, part of it's that enablement of digital technologies. And the other side of it is saying, how can we bring best-in-class digital experiences to all of our brands in their very own unique voices, their unique stories, so that we can connect those brands and their incredible histories to those consumers broadly.
And how do you do that? I mean, what you're talking about is extraordinarily complex with the number of brands that you've got, and you're talking about, you know, the day-to-day of websites and newsletters and updates and keeping pictures fresh. So how do you, you know, where do you start? What's the beginning and what's the back end of all of this?
Yeah, no, it's true, right? Complexity is the absolute way to describe it. And there are, again, I don't want to say that the digital team does all of that, because we have people working on our direct-to-consumer team that are really brilliant at creating emails and, you know, updating our websites and doing things like that. What we want to do is create this broader cohesion, right? And how we deliver that brand story, how we deliver those brand experiences across all of the different touch points in digital. And that's really, it's a huge collaborative effort. We want to get in the middle of that and say, all right, how do we want to deliver this story? What are the unique pieces of technology that are going to enable us to do that? And one brand is going to be very different in how they engage and create experience for the consumers. There's no expectation that the consumer experience in digital for 19 Crimes is going to be anything like the consumer experience for a luxury Cabernet brand like BV, right?
Okay, let's get down to how it all works. I am a consumer for 19 Crimes. Imagine that I'm a 22-year-old boy, and I drink 19 Crimes, and so does my mum. She buys it for me. So what sort of digital experience are you going to create for me, and how do you attract me?
Yeah.
Like, am I likely to sign up for newsletters? How are you going to attract my attention?
Well, as a 22-year-old, the likelihood of you signing up for emails is probably not as high as the likelihood of somebody
else. But I do like the
else.
Dracula. I do like the Dracula labels. I appreciated that a lot. And so did my mom.
Right. And that's the thing is, so I try not to think about people in an age category, right? Because age demographics, I think, is a generally not a great way of thinking about it, especially when it relates to digital, because it's more about what you're doing online versus your age, right? I always joke that, you know, like my mother-in-law and Oprah are roughly the same age demographic. I imagine their lives are a little bit different, right? Mm-hmm. So thinking about it more from a perspective of how do they want to engage with us online, giving them options, you know, if from a communications channel, you mentioned, you know, talked about, oh, they're not going to sign up for email. No, but they may certainly want to sign up for something like an SMS program from a text program. They may prefer to get their information directly in social. So you can create direct message moderation so that if they want to engage with you directly in Instagram, they can do that.
Can I just stop you? So
sure.
I would imagine that, you know, 19 Crimes is a fascinating brand, but it's also a mass market brand. I can go to any store and just buy it when I want it. So why would I want to digitally engage with you on that?
To get beyond that, right? So there's, I don't want to say brand loyalty because that's a tough category. That's a tough thing to think about. But there are really cool experiences that you can get by engaging with brands outside of the store. They're really cool, you know, for 19 Crimes, the infamous Insiders program has the opportunity where you can earn points and you can create a custom label that includes your own picture that you could put onto the bottle and in the very 19 Crimes style. Super cool stuff. But even beyond that, and this is where it starts to become really interesting, right? Like you think of a brand like Nike, where you can go to virtually any clothing store that has shoes, you know, across the U.S. and you can get yourself a pair of Nikes. But you can't get all of them, right? Or you can't get customized ones or various things. So there is a bigger shift in this grand scheme of things where even products that you would think of as these mass market brands are creating newer or creating custom products or creating interesting things, or they're allowing those people that are connected to them online, they're true brand aficionados, the big fans, to get products earlier. Right. So you launch a product and it's going to be available on the website for 2, maybe 3 months before it's actually available in a retailer.
That's so interesting. I had no idea that you did that. So it's like the sneakers of wine.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You will.
And how much uptake do you have of that? Oh, how do people find out about it?
Oh, tremendous. People love the ability to bring something new to their friends. They love to have it first. Right. It's that experience of true exploration and basically like, hey, I got it before anybody else. You know, we talked about those Halloween characters. Those launched on the website about 6 weeks before they launched in the mass market retailers across the U.S. And they sold out online within days. They go very, very quickly. It's usually limited volumes. You'll see that with upcoming Snoop Dogg products in 19 Crimes. You see it with, I mean, we talk about it in a different sense with our luxury Cabernet brands and our sort of our luxury wine brands, because those, everybody always talks about, well, these are our direct consumer only products. And these are so everybody, even in the wine industry, we all know that those kinds of things work, right? They bring people to the brand that are beyond the products that are available in store. There's no reason the mass market brands can't do those same kinds of things. And it really just gets people excited and gets people more likely to, when they make that grocery trip, to then be picking up a bottle of your favorite brand. Because we've treated them with something new and fun.
Let's talk about the creative ideas behind that. So how far out do you spend going, okay, so we need something for Halloween. Do you get an advertising agency to come up with the creative, or do you do that in-house? How does a campaign work? Talk me through it from start to finish.
So that's really our brand team, right? Our brand team behind 19 Crimes, they're the ones that are really thinking through what is the proposition? What is the, and especially, you know, they're really creative, right? I mean, it's a super creative brand. They're super thoughtful. They're putting that brand in environments that wine typically isn't necessarily, with the sponsorship with the UFC, right? We're putting wine in a very different role than you might see at other places. they've also been really thoughtful about that when it comes to occasions. And that's why, like, wine isn't typically your, Halloween's not typically an occasion for wine necessarily. 19 Crimes has said, oh, it should be. Why not? Let's do this. So that's not how we get involved is, you know, teams come up with, hey, this is the proposition. This is really cool. And we want to be able to reach people online. We want to be able to reach people in different ways. And yeah, there's definitely agencies involved that are creating these cool augmented reality experiences and have a lot of support around different things. But it's about bringing that collective knowledge together. Our brand teams are telling beautiful stories, creating really cool propositions and coming up with, and then our digital teams are saying, okay, how do we take that and we translate it in a way that makes sense, or we create a strategy around it so that we can take this beautiful content that's being developed and ensure that it's being seen by as many people as possible.
So this is really interesting. I use 19 Crimes a lot because I think it's in 2016, I actually went to J. Walter Thompson in London to talk to them about how they were developing it. And I saw lots of people try and copy the augmented reality without understanding that there was a big strategy behind it. Now, what you're really talking about is you're moving wine from being wine into entertainment. How far can you push it? And how much does having celebrities and stuff feature into that?
Yeah, celebrities allow you to engage in a broader audience, right? So you think about borrowing audiences. That's generally the purpose. Now, they've also created their own cachet and their own style and their own thing. So that's, I mean, again, I look at 19 Crimes specifically, and it was like the idea, not just of partnering with a celebrity like Snoop Dogg, but putting him on the label was a breakthrough, because it became super, you know, when you went into a retailer, you didn't have to work hard to figure out which of these wines was the wine that Snoop Dogg was on, right? Like, you saw it and it was there. So there's a lot of really smart people went into the marketing effort and the thought process behind that. Taking back to your original comment though, is that's entirely what digital is all about, is about bringing entertainment. And entertainment can mean a lot of things, right? Some people are very entertained by simply learning in depth about where their wine is coming from and the winemaking process. Other people are entertained by, you know, being able to come up with the best food and wine pairings that maybe you didn't think of that are a little bit different than just purely saying steak and Cabernet. And on a completely other level, some people aren't entertained by wine at all. It's just part of their experience. So we need to entertain them and build a cool experience in a different way that isn't really focused on wine.
Do you build profiles of who, do you know who's fascinated by the terroir, who's fascinated by the food, and who just wants something to take with them?
Yeah.
And how do you know that?
So it's, we try, right? So we get into personalization concepts when it relates to digital, where you kind of get a sense for and an understanding through data what your consumers' affinities are, you know, and I try not to judge too. This is the other side of things. Like, you don't want to, I don't want to put people into categories per se, but I want to get a sense for what a particular person is interacting with. Are they interacting with components of our content that is purely about fun and about, you know, creating almost nothing to do with wine, but just enabling them to sort of be the hero of the story, right? Where we're just giving them tips on how to host a party or tips on various other things that sort of allow our brand to be a part of their life. In a kind of a cool and unique way.
Let's talk examples. Let's say I know nothing about wine, but let's say as a person, I may be somebody who one day is going to be fascinated by terroir, whatever. I'm in a store, I pick up a bottle of 19 Crimes, I take it home, I quite like it. So that's the start of our relationship. How do you move me from that into your system? And then how do you know that you can move me into other parts of the system and get me interested in other wines? Take me on the journey that you will take me on.
Yeah, so this is where a lot of our automation and programming comes into play is, we start creating, and for different people, communication is going to come in different ways, but let's talk about email. We start creating email journeys where we'll send you an email, and how you interact with that email will somewhat determine what the next message you get. Did you click through to the website to learn more about that subject? No? Okay, well, let's try something else. Let's build upon those things. So let's get a sense for what you really like to do. But we're also going to create other unique experiences. We're going to, you know, where you can jump onto a website and you can go through a series of questions. So it might be a fun experience because we're going to get you to, on our Stags Leap site, where for Mother's Day, it was about finding the perfect Mother's Day day that you can spend with your mom. What is she like? What is she into? What are the kinds of things you like to do with her? What are the kinds of foods you like to do? So that we really got a sense of who the person was. Are they adventurous? Would they prefer to just read a book and stay at home? So that all of those affinities, all of those pieces kind of start fitting into a puzzle of who this consumer is.
So it's like a decision tree, basically. Depending on what I do, I go down a different pathway.
Exactly.
Okay, so what have you learned about consumers from doing this?
I've learned that the majority of consumers, even within our luxury segments, are not as into the details of wine as we think they are. Mm-hmm. Not that they're not interested in it. There's a lot of people that come from a hospitality perspective to engage at our tasting rooms and really get in-depth information. But the majority of people really see wine as an additive to whatever experience they're having in their own lives. It's a piece that helps helps the bigger picture. Are they having a wonderful romantic dinner at home and want to really up the quality of the wine because they want this to be a special occasion? Are they bringing a bottle of wine to a friend's house and they just don't want to feel stupid for bringing a bad bottle, right? There's a lot of different things that go into making a decision around wine that it's not, I mean, in many cases, it is about the terroir and the variety and the winemaking process. And when it comes to our luxury side, there's more people engaged in that. But the broader consumer audience, they want to feel confident that they're buying a good bottle of wine. They want to feel like they have some level of connection to the brand. And that can be through all sorts of different things, whether it's through a celebrity that they love and admire, or through a sustainability message that they can connect with, right? There's lots of different ways.
Do you think that people are still intimidated by wine, or do you think that's something that belongs to the past and people don't care anymore?
I think people don't want to spend a lot of money on a bottle that they don't know much about. I don't think that they're intimidated by wine, right? I think that that's a wrong segment. Nobody says, oh, you're intimidated by whiskey, but there's literally bottles of whiskey that are hundreds of dollars and that are, so intimidation, I think, is the wrong word. I think that people want to know that they're getting value, that they're getting something of meaning. So, you know, you can go in and buy a bottle of wine for $20 and just feel good that, hey, the label is cool. It's a variety I know. Maybe it's a brand I've seen online, and that's awesome. And they're like, oh, well, why didn't you buy the $50 bottle? And they're intimidated by it. I don't really see that being the case. At the same time, we do tend to create barriers. We tend to create rules associated to wine that, like, the regular consumer's like, wait a minute, so I shouldn't drink this red wine with this fish that I just want to drink what I like and eat what I like. And there's all sorts of these kinds of things. So I definitely think we create barriers that probably don't need to exist. And we maybe kind of try and treat wine a little bit differently than others are treating, you know, their products. But I don't think consumers are intimidated by it.
So I want to come back to what you said about demographics and whether it was useful or not, but let's talk about luxury and premium wine. So we hear a lot about premiumization and about the luxury market. How do you act differently digitally for ultra premium and luxury wine than you would for other areas of the market? Or do you, is it just you send people down the same decision pathway for the same reasons?
I think they're fairly similar, quite frankly. So there are an awful lot of people that are purchasing in the luxury segment from a digital perspective that have very, very similar tendencies to the people that are purchasing in non-luxury segment. And
interesting.
And here's something that we need to think about and realize, and I forget which study this came from, but it was relatively recent. It was something in the 40 to 45% of luxury consumers are actually sitting just above levels of poverty, or, you know, just not in this upper middle class, upper class kind of perspective that we all think about, right?
Tell me more about that. That's fascinating. Well,
luxury is a lot about luxury shopping and a lot about luxury products is the aspirational value of it. People look to that as that is something that is celebratory that I can feel good about, right? So when people buy those products, there's a component of feeling like it's some like a level of celebration, or I want to buy that product as a gift for my, you know, new father-in-law or my dad or my mom or something like that, where they're willing to spend out of their typical price range for these kinds of things. So if you're only marketing to somebody making, you know, an annual income of $150,000 or more, you're actually missing a large volume of the audience that is making purchases in the luxury segment. So, yes, we are going to build our audiences more thoughtfully around upper income households. At the same time, you still have to have that aspirational message. You still have to hold yourself to this standard, if you will, in the digital world that creates this is truly an above and beyond product that is not, A, it's going to be meaningful if you're giving it to somebody as a gift, but also meaningful for you if this is something you are going to spend your hard-earned dollars treating yourself, even if you're not going to be, you're not going to buy it every month, right? You're not going to buy it every week. This is not your Tuesday night dinner wine. But if you're getting something special to celebrate an evening or do something like that, that is also a buyer that we have to really be thoughtful about, right? So that's where you tend to get into trouble if you really start focusing on one consumer or one type of consumer, because it's a much broader segment of the population that is interested in luxury products.
Okay, so let's talk about demographics. So there's a lot of chatter, as you know, that Gen Zs and people of legal drinking age are not entering the market, or maybe they're drinking RTDs. But then I've heard other people say, actually, it's not about demographics, it's about, you know, intention and behaviour. What's your perspective on this? I mean, it's a really serious issue for the wine industry. So how do you see it?
I think it's both. And I know that's sort of like the riding the fence mode, but...
It is riding the fence.
But I'll give you the reasoning behind it. There are absolutely wineries that are doing an exceptional job reaching out to Gen Z populations and creating this affinity with younger audiences, and are starting to lower the average age of their consumer. You can look at Wente Family Estates as a model for that. They've done an exceptional job shifting that demographic down by creating beautiful experiences at their properties and really honing in on messaging and thoughtfulness around what the brand stands for and where it's built to, and getting that message in front of the right audiences. That being said, I do think that consumers today, whether you're younger or older, have way more choices and way more options than we've ever had before. So being really thoughtful about how you stand out is going to be is a much more difficult proposition than it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago. So and that's especially the case for people that are being brought up in this generation of choice. And if you have all of the choices in the world, and I mean in the world, because we are connected everywhere, not just localized. Mm-hmm. You're not just going to have your, if you're from Northern California, Napa is not your only choice, right? You can literally get a really great bottle of wine from Italy and have it, you know, delivered to your house within 2 hours. That's very different than it was before. So we have to be thoughtful about the level of choice people have and how we connect.
Given how much people are panicking about this issue, if you were on stage at Wine to Wine, which you will be later this year. If you were advising an Italian winery or a French winery, an Australian winery, what they should do to connect with younger audiences, what would your advice be?
I think most every winery needs to really step up the work that they're doing in content. And content is not just, you know, creating beautiful photography that you can post on organic social media that most people will probably never see, but it's really being thoughtful about how you engage and interact with people online and are able to distribute that content across so many different platforms in a meaningful way so that you can start engaging with people all over the place in the choice, in the place that they want to be on, whether they want to learn about you on LinkedIn, learn about you on Reddit, or come directly to your website. Having a consistent presence in sort of an omni-internet sort of way is going to be very important.
Okay, Justin, I've just made you into a consultant for small to medium-sized wineries. Now, as you know, they don't have high budgets and they don't have a lot of expertise in this area. So you're going to walk into a medium-sized winery and they want a content strategy. Where would you start for maximum effect, but, you know, when you do have minimum expertise, would you tell them to use AI? Where should they start?
AI is super helpful in the expansion of content. It's not necessarily the greatest thing to come up with your content strategy. Like that's got to be unique to the winery itself. That's got to be unique to them. What is the story that they're trying to tell? But then take that beyond, right? Because if the story you're telling is, we have the best terroir, we have the best winemaking practices, mm-hmm. we have the best wine.
And it's made in the vineyard. Don't forget that.
And it's not true, and it's not that it's not super important. It's just that that is not differentiating across the board. Yeah. Now, if that winemaker is also willing to do a podcast like the one you're on, that's going to be 10 episodes over the course of a year or over the course of, you know, 6 months, that is an hour long, that can be broken down into smaller segments. And now you're using AI to cut those clips into 15 seconds pieces that can be posted on a variety of different channels. Now we're talking about something that you can start connecting, right? And those tools aren't expensive. They take time and they take effort, and you have to...
$30 a month for anybody who's interested.
There you go. So it's not that you can't do it. There's that level of creativity, right? What is going to be unique about the brand? What's going to be differentiating about the brand beyond the creation of product, which it's almost a bar, right? The product has to be exceptional. That's the bar. Now what's that next step? And that's how we're engaging people from a digital perspective, is taking those traditional marketing, traditional media stuff and saying, look, we can do that at a much lower cost to a much broader audience of people with the volume of tools that are available. Certainly with looking at AI to how do we expand that reach? How do we cut those mm-hmm. pieces? How do we make it so that the team that is doing that content distribution has the bandwidth and resources to be able to do that in a nice way? But yeah, it's what level of entertainment are you going to provide that's going to start engaging
people?
Yeah,
it's interesting. Just to talk about myself for a second, I launched this podcast 5 weeks ago, and you know, podcasts are very hard to discover. So I've got a newsletter with it, and it's really interesting. Every time, like, I expected really teeny tiny numbers, but every time I put a newsletter out, the podcast discoverability goes up way higher than I expected it to, and then more people sign up for the newsletter, and so it's quite a virtuous circle. It's faster than I expected, even though it's very difficult. But speaking of difficult, let's talk about social media. I mean, social media has become really, really difficult. So can you talk about that? What now works and what should be avoided?
Yeah, social media is tough, right? So if, like, you know, we kind of follow the platform guidelines. So things like TikTok are kind of off limits because they're not geared for alcohol brands as of yet. We imagine that's going to change relatively soon. But what works in a total perspective is authentic content, not the highly polished, beautiful, you know, brand imagery. I mean, people love seeing that. They love, again, that's part of that luxury experience of, like, mm-hmm. that aspirational model. But if we really want to connect with people and use social media in the way that it's meant to be social, it's that day-to-day interaction. It's the coming up with how do we encourage engagement? Are we asking them questions? Are we posting, you know, things that might, I don't want to say controversial, but at least elicit a response, and be really thoughtful in that. You know, organic social media is more and more built with algorithms that will not see a huge audience unless you have really high engagement scores. So engagement should be the number one thought process when it comes to posting anything in an organic way.
Can you give some insider tips on what typically gets high engagement and what just falls flat?
Well, so just being thoughtful about that you're asking for engagement, right? If if you ask a question in a post that you want your fans, your audiences to comment on, mm-hmm. then they're going to go in and comment on it. And even if it's a yes or no, and they go in and answer yes, or they go in and answer no, that comment comes across as engagement to the algorithms within social media. So it's more and more people are engaging with it. The algorithm says that post must be more interesting, so I'm going to show it to more people. So the more often you can do those kinds of things. And in fact, there was, and I don't recommend this because I think it's silly, but there was a trend within the influencer community where they were making mistakes in their posts, where they were, you know, spelling things wrong, or they were doing math or something where they were wrong. And people have a desire to go in and correct people, right? So they would do it on purpose so that lots and lots and lots of people would jump into the comments to correct them on their mistake. All it did was drive up their engagement and make sure that their other posts were being seen by more and more people. It was actually, from an engagement perspective, a brilliant strategy.
I can do that. I can make spelling mistakes.
Exactly, right? So it's.
And I would get so much crap if I did that, having been an editor. My engagement would go through the roof. I'm tempted,
right.
Justin.
It's see if it works, right? No, but but that's the thing to be thoughtful of is really testing the algorithms and saying, what are the things that I can do to ensure that my content is being seen by broader people? Beyond that, thinking about it like on a top level of your content distribution strategy. So if you're thinking about content, is how can I create something like you create your podcast? How can I create that long form piece of content, but then break it down into so many different pieces of content that I can put it on all of these other platforms? Because if 1,000 people are seeing it on Instagram, but Instagram is the only place that you're posting it, then 1,000 people saw it. If 1,000 people see it on Instagram and 500 people see it on Pinterest and 1,000 people see it on LinkedIn and another 1,000 people see it on Reddit, you're creating that exponential growth and encouraging more and more people to understand. And then hopefully they'll link back into your podcast, or maybe not. Maybe they'll just wait for the next piece of content to drop.
Let's talk about Reddit, because I would never have thought that Reddit would be a commercial strategy. What sort of things do you put on Reddit?
You know, so that's the tough spot, because Reddit is definitely one of those communities where authenticity matters, right? You don't just want to be a brand that's sticking brand content on there. But could you engage with that community and the discussions that they're already having? There's certainly advertising opportunities. Reddit absolutely loves people to go in and pay for ads. But there's lots of different ways where it's think about the discussions, right? Like if you were a brand, what's the which conversations would you want to jump into that are both relevant and authentic to what you're doing in a way that makes sense? You don't want to just be a brand that jumps onto a platform with no context to what the platform is about or what those kind of people like and what they're looking to see. So that's where that content distribution strategy kind of comes into play, is this content relevant to that audience? And if it's not, can I make it relevant? Can I make it fit? Does it work? Or is this audience just, they need something completely different? And maybe they're again, not every audience is suitable to every brand. That's how it goes. But the bigger these platforms are, the more likelihood there is a niche audience on there that would absolutely be interested in what you have to say.
Well, now you're talking about, again, it comes back to a lot of effort to have somebody sitting, you know, talking to people on Reddit. So where do you, how do you allocate your resources in a world where you do have Pinterest and Reddit and Facebook and Instagram and so on? Do you automate it or do you actually have somebody sitting arguing with people on Reddit?
Definitely not sitting and arguing with people on Reddit, right?
Come on, that's what Reddit's for.
It really is. And that's the fun stuff, I imagine. Look, if your brand is an argumentative brand, maybe it makes sense, right? Like there's brands that have been incredibly successful simply talking trash on Twitter all day. And I'll call it Twitter because X still feels weird. But they've been incredibly successful in joking around with other brands or having other things. There are absolutely brands that are very successful creating viral moments by having arguments on Reddit as well. Back to the resource question is it's different for every brand, right? And it's different for the life cycle of the brand and where they're at and what they're trying to do. What are we trying to accomplish? Having those aligned goals from the beginning of here's what we want to do in the digital world. We want to generate more awareness. We want to generate more brand. Or do we want to literally be driving people to make a purchase somewhere? You know, there's a lot of different goals that can build, and that's where that broader digital strategy starts. Because if you have a holistic digital strategy and you can combine that with a really smart content strategy from the teams, you know, doing the storytelling, then figuring out where all of those pieces lie is more about you have all the pieces to the puzzle there, and it's really playing that symphony, if you will, of, you know, making all of that flow together so that you're maximizing your time and your effort. Again, I go back to that the podcast example of if you spend 2-3 hours creating a podcast, you need to be able to take that podcast and use it 100 other ways so that your cost to produce that piece of content is actually spread across many, 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 many pieces of content. And that's really where you start thinking about, you know, that productivity component.
Okay, so let's talk about something else. Treasury Wine Estates is a global company and you exist in many, many markets. So how do you run out a content strategy across different languages and different cultures?
Yeah, that's the tough part. And a lot of it has to do with people specific to those regions. Because you want it to be authentic. A single message isn't necessarily going to resonate with everybody globally. Some of it do, right? They have the overarching. I mean, I think Penfolds is a great example of creating a really beautiful global brand, but still having activations in regional markets that they all line up to be Penfolds brand. They all are part of that broader brand experience, but are really smart about how they regionalize some of the characteristics of it, and continue to build on that. It's really about collaboration with broader sets of teams when it comes to global. And
okay, so in your role as a consultant, which I've made you do, you're speaking to a medium-sized winery that wants to go into export markets with a strategy. What should they do? Should they hire an agency that they probably don't have enough money for? Or what are the steps for engaging digitally in different cultures?
Well, so this is tough, right? Because each culture you might get a slightly different answer. If you talk about digital specifically, how you engage with people in a digital way in the United States is very, very different than how you would engage with people in a digital way in China, right? The way that people interact with the internet is very different in China than it is in the US. So those kind of components, even just the technology behind it, let alone the language issue barriers and all of the other things, are going to be super, super different. So I certainly start with markets that are as similar to the market that you're in as possible from a cultural perspective, from a language perspective, but also from the ability to reach people, kind of thing. That you will find the most success there. But I do think it is about reaching out and having a partner, whether it's an agency or just other organization, maybe it's your importer, that truly understands those communities and how people want to be reached. What are their unique problems, so to speak, that you can solve, right? What are the unique, you know, pieces of your brand, pieces of your product that can go in and be like, ah, this is a good option for you guys. And that's going to be different from place to place. It doesn't mean you can't create this overarching brand ideal and brand strategy. 19 Crimes does it really beautifully as well with the new platform that they're on, that you can kind of get a sense for what that message is going to be and how it's going to be laid out, but how it comes to life and execution could be different from place to place for sure.
One of the things about communications is people like communicating with people. And Treasury, of course, is a publicly listed company, you know, that don't have small family-owned wineries. So, okay, so you've got celebrities with 19 Crimes, but in what other ways can you personalize the brands?
Well, I mean, Treasury has an awful lot of people at it too, right? That we all work for Treasury, but you know, if you went to Behringer's tasting room in Napa Valley, you're going to meet people that work for Behringer, that know the Behringer story, that see our Behringer club members constantly, and are there for them and talk through that. We certainly have winemakers that are doing exceptional work for the brands that they are. That, you know, Trevor Durling is absolute rock star and creates amazing wine.
I'm not trying to be controversial, but because you are a corporate, at some point those winemakers might go and get another job. So how do you balance between a personal relationship with those people and the fact that that personal relationship may not, you know, how much do you feature people is what I'm trying to say.
So I think it's important because people want connections, right? They want connections, but the brands themselves tend to stand for more than the people that are in there in the everyday. And some of that is again, we're fortunate to have some pretty incredible brands like Penfolds and like BV that have these beautiful histories and these beautiful stories that, you know, can come to life in a lot of different ways. But you're right. It is different, right? It's not the story of the proprietors all the time. Although we like to continue on those kind of journeys. We like people to know what these brands are and who they started from. And, you know, if there's certainly from a content creation standpoint, you know, if somebody new comes into the brand, we want to introduce them. We want to talk about them because that's part of that connective tissue that our consumers have with those brands.
Okay, so let's talk about how you do this for the trade. What is different about the way that you communicate to the trade?
Digital is tough when it comes to trade marketing. I think a lot of...
I did not expect you to say that. Okay, yeah, tell
no,
me why it's
I,
tough.
I mean, you know, because it's not that it's impossible, but it is definitely different. And certainly in the United States with Tide House laws and how we can... what level of digital programming we can do to support something happening at a specific retailer or not, right? Like those parts are relatively difficult. I think one of our biggest challenges, quite frankly, is the continuation of educating sales and distribution and even our retailers on the value that the brand effort is putting in. And how that supports, how that makes a difference, right? Like, it's one thing for a retailer to be able to, you know, they're driving down the highway going to work and they see this giant billboard that shows 19 Crimes, right? They know, like, hey, that billboard for 19 Crimes is more likely to drive people into my store or is more likely to have somebody at my store buy 19 Crimes, like, because they see it and they feel it. Digital doesn't operate that way because digital is much more tactical from a segmentation perspective, right? It doesn't just hit everybody. It hits what we believe are the right people. So that retailer may never actually see those ads. Even though those ads are being served to, you know, all of the people that we believe would be the likely targets in their areas to go in and buy that product, the retailer might not be the one. So really educating our broader teams as it relates to the trade with the work that's being done, the type of programming there is, and the end results. You know, so if we can start doing, we do geographical programs where it's like, hey, this is going to be the broader Dallas area, and we're going to run it for, you know, a month long, and we're going to see what upticks in sales and various things we have based off of the programming. We really have to do a great job of communicating that and understanding, you know, that some level of education is going to be necessary, because it is a different way of marketing and a different thought process that goes into it that is not as obvious as others.
Okay, so consultant Justin, we've been talking for 50 minutes. Now, as you know, you look pretty happy to be in the wine business, but as you know, a lot of people are pretty unhappy at the moment. Sales are declining, people are panicking. If you could advise your small to medium-sized and even larger companies on things that they should be doing but they're not doing at the moment, what would your advice be?
Take more chances, especially as it revolves around the digital world. And how you might connect to consumers. We talked earlier about the sort of prototypical wine story. And I think people, you have a better job of engaging a broader audience of people if you can get, don't take that away, people still care about that, but if you can get beyond that and say, what are the other things that the company cares about? What are the other aspects of the story are there? And can we start engaging people in other ways that make the consumer sort of the hero of the story, right? We want to be consumer obsessed. And if we're consumer obsessed, then the consumer's got to be the hero. So what are the aspects of their life that we can start playing in, that we can start having good conversations around, as opposed to continuously just telling them about us and why we're special?
Can you give me an example of a time you've done that wasn't 19 Crimes, wasn't a celebrity, and you didn't need a big budget to do? Give me an example of something where you actually did that and it worked.
Yeah, well, back to this program that we had to Stag's Leap. Stag's Leap is a luxury wine brand that has pretty amazing Cabernets, but I will say their Petit Sirah is phenomenal. A Mother's Day campaign that was 100% digital that invited people to come onto the Stag's Leap website and create the perfect day to spend with their mom, that had a really nice digital experience that led them through a journey that at the end of the journey, answering questions, engaging with different things, it ended up with a sort of an itinerary of what to do on Mother's Day with you and your mom. So it was, the goal of it was, I'm going to, you know, Mother's Day is coming up. You want to have an impressive and fun day with your mom. Let's help you create that and let's build that. And then at the end of it, we had this itinerary that connected the dots of what they liked and what kinds of things they might want to do. And we had some wines that we suggested might be a part of that experience. That fit that mold, you know, whether it was a cold Sauvignon Blanc, you know, because they were going to be at the beach that day, or it was, you know, something a little heartier because they were going to be at home doing a cooking class together or something like that. Stag's Leap wasn't the hero of the story. It was the person and their mother. They were the heroes. We were just playing a part of it and helping them navigate what could be a difficult day.
And what was the result?
Exceptional. The volume of people that both joined our database. So we had ad programs that encouraged people to come into the experience. And part of that was signing up for email and SMS kind of programs. And then, so that was sort of our core thing of like, hey, we just want to engage people. We want to have a lot of fun with this. We want to get more people into our database. That worked really, really well. The ancillary benefit was an awful lot of those people also made a purchase online from us to buy the wine that made sense for their program. So the return on the end of it was like, hey, this is great. There's revenue coming in, and there are people buying our wines, which is always great. But it's also, a lot of those people were first-time buyers that were direct to Stag's Leap. So they were buying the wine for the very first time. And that meant that the very first time they're buying wine, they're also connecting it with a memory with their mom, or at least they just spent the last 10 minutes answering questions about what their mom likes, right? So we're creating this connectivity, this tissue between them that isn't just about, I enjoyed this wine at a dinner somewhere. It was, this is the thing when I started thinking about my mom and all the good times we have and how much I appreciate her is the wine that I bought, right? So you can kind of get beyond, you know, your typical brand awareness and really start getting into that brand relevancy and connection.
Just a question that's just occurred to me. One of the things that a lot of people in fine wine are talking about at the moment is the fact that they're seeing young people come into fine wine as collectors, the 28 to 40-year-olds, which they haven't seen before. And that one of the reasons that people are coming in is because of technology, that they have apps that make trading transparent and so on. Have you worked on anything for that group?
No, so I haven't, but it's super interesting. And it's definitely something that is on my radar right now. It's something that's been on the Penfolds team radar for quite a while, right? They launched, you know, one of the first like NFT kind of programs, and there's just more from a let's experiment and see what happens and kind of see where we can go. There's definitely this younger affluent audience that is certainly capable of being wine collectors. But to your point, it's that understanding of value. And I think it goes back to all of the wine decisions, all the purchasing decisions people make in wine is if you have a very transparent and easy way to understand the value that you're getting, if you know that the vast majority of people are paying X amount for this bottle of wine and you find a way that you can get it for less than that, even if that's a very transactional nature in your head, there is a clear component of value and that you feel like you're getting the right kind of deal, whether you're putting it into your cellar to save for later to then resell down the road, or just you want to make sure that you're getting the value for your money. And that's important too.
Okay. Final thoughts. What in this gloomy wine market, you look pretty cheerful. What are you excited about and where do you think it's going to go?
We can get into the market side of the ups and downs of people drinking wine, not drinking wine, people having more choice available to them. Even to some extent, there's the conversations around people just drinking less in general and being healthier. I think the connectivity that people have with wine as a positive component of alcohol in culture, where they're celebrating, where they're connecting with their friends, where, having meaningful conversations, gives wine a very interesting place in the world. Mm. And, the more that we can build on those connections, the more that we can deepen that level of storytelling, but also just getting that storytelling in front of them, in front of the audiences, in the ways that they want to consume it, I don't see it as a super negative right now. I think there's a lot of opportunity.
No, and as I always say about people drinking less, never, ever, ever bet against something that's lasted for 8,000 years.
Yeah, we always have to evolve, right? We always have to continue to change our approach. In some instances, it's not necessarily the actual story being told or the product, being delivered, but it might be the media in which it's being delivered in. It might be the platform in which it's on. It might be some of the language changes that need to be made because the language fluency is a little bit different. We have incredible technology that allows us to be much more specific to the actual consumer. We're never going to get to like a one-to-one relationship necessarily from a technology perspective, but we no longer have to create a single message or a single story that has to reach everybody. And that's important.
All right. Well, that's a positive moment to end on. So thank you so much for your time. That was a great conversation.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to Drinks Insider, the podcast that explores the intersection of beverages and commerce. Now, if you would like a summary of this episode, sign up for the Drinks Insider newsletter, which sends you the takeaways. Just go to drinksinsider.com and add your name. And if there's something you think we should be talking about, drop me a line at felicity@drinksinsider.com. And before you go, please don't forget to rate this podcast. 5 stars are most welcome. Thank you.